I'm Sean, I'm an addict. Hello everyone. And I'll start by thanking you, Roz, and you, Layla, for a great chair. And I was having a swim after work the other night, thinking about what I'd share about tonight. You know, 40 minutes chairs, that's a long share. And all I could come up with at the end was if I could just come along and carry some sort of message, basically. I mean, my experience, strength and hope of, you know, if I say so myself, I've certainly got a lot of experience now. And yeah, so I thought I could just come here and carry some sort of message. And before I forget, the best thing I think I could ever say is that what I've always done throughout my recovery is, with absolute consistency, is to come to meetings and try my utmost to share honestly, you know. And that has been my real, you know, cornerstone, I think, of my recovery. And obviously with that, there's a whole kind of catalogue of other things that come into play for me to work this program. But that has been my kind of my number one thing, and that, I think that's, on any given day, that's the best message kind of recovery I could give to anyone. And I mean, with that, there's, you know, there comes all sorts of things. It's a physical form of surrender. You know, whenever I come in a meeting, sit down and try my utmost to kind of listen. It's a kind of steps 1, 2, and 3 type thing. And get some sanity in my life, because I've been around a long time now. It's 18 years, my 19th year clean and sober, and it's a big deal. And I wanted to say it because I don't want to get involved in any false modesty. Because I know when I first came around, listening to people, because as we all know, getting 24 hours clean in those early days is beyond your wildest dreams. And here I am now, you know, with all these years, and and my life is very rich, very full. You know, I'm married, 3 children. I've been married for, I think this Christmas will be 13 years. And I mean, that in itself is a fantastic thing. And, you know, friends and my own business and customers and all sorts of things. On any given day, all these things that I've got in my life can also send me over the edge and drive me into places of kind of despair, anger, frustration, all those things that I kind of used to use on, basically, to avoid. So the meetings are all important, you know, and that's what I do. I come to meetings and I try to afford the meetings the utmost respect, you know, because once again, it's a real tangible way of me to see that I'm respecting myself, you know, and trying to get the best for me. And, you know, for me, my actual drug use started when I was a schoolboy. And that was back in the mid-70s now. And, you know, it was... I was thinking about it when I was swimming the other night. You know, the the first time I smoked a joint, or part of a joint, was around the flats. There was some kind of... leftover hippies, you know, and I'm still living. Didn't quite make it out, it seemed. And anyway, one night I ended up there with some pals, you know, as I say, about 14, and I'm sitting there. And these people, you know, smoking dope, and the whole kind of thing, you know, the whole kind of... you know, so I was thinking about it, and these people, the way they dress, spoke, you know, the music, you know, I'm sure, you know, Dark Side of the Moon was on in somewhere in the flat, and so, but I've got to be honest with you, to use a kind of, you know, a term of those days, I think I was turned on by the whole thing, you know, if I'm honest, and it was such a contrast to where I was coming from. You know, I'm Anglo-Irish, you know, first generation Irish, whatever it is, I never remember, and Irish parents. And it was a real kind of, I mean, both my parents were alcoholic, you know, let's be honest. And as my older brother was by then, I think, was a kind of park bench drunk, you know, full on, awful kind of, you know, stuff. And so this offered me, you know, and I was 14 and I took on my entire family's shame. You know, I thought, I'll take that. I'll look after that for the, you know, for the time being. And I'm still trying to let go of that, do you know what I mean? A day at a time. And so there I was, sat there, and I, you know, and as you know, I don't think I got stoned the first time, but I think the seed was planted, and I thought maybe I can have some kind of, you know, because I wasn't doing anything else, you know, obviously I wasn't kind of excelling in school, or my mum had recently died from cancer, and it, our house was a kind of nightmare. So nothing was going on for me, you know. And I thought maybe I can take this on, you know, this kind of persona. Not some mad hippie persona, but a kind of a drug use kind of thing. And there started, I think, as well for me, a kind of a, almost like a split personality, a double life. Because I was a kid, you know, where I grew up, it was a kind of pretty sort of, you know, regular, in as much as, you know, in a city kind of in Kilburn, where, you know, some of us went to work, others didn't, others slowly got into a life of crime. And I went to work, you know, I got an apprenticeship, and I was, you know, very tenacious, you know, as you need to be, you know, to be an active drug addict. And I was, you know, I was doing well. You know, that's where I did excel at work, and, you know, and the kind of the drug use kind of progressed as my illness progressed. And by the age of 19, you know, I'd had or supposedly achieved a lot of what I thought I was meant to achieve. You know, a gorgeous girlfriend and somewhere to live and a job and money and a load of mates and, you know. But I've got to tell you, I'd never felt worse, you know what I mean? It was like this kind of self-rejection was turning into self-hate. And I was in a real bad way. And, you know, the actual dope smoking was no longer working for me. All I was doing was feeling incredibly paranoid all the time. And, you know, and I was trying to juggle it as maybe you have done with, you know, up in the alcohol and some tablets and this and that. But it just wasn't doing it for me. And with rejecting my kind of, you know, the rejection of myself and all what I was doing came the rejection of my girlfriend. And it was all just, you know, and I thought I was going absolutely insane. I mean, I had no idea of anything in these days. You know, it was that whole kind of thing of you don't tell anybody anything, really. You just try to make out you've got a few answers and that things are okay. But I was really in trouble, you know. And then when I look back, because I can compare my life then to now, you know, and I can, you know, I've got a lot of serenity in my life now, a lot of self-acceptance, a lot of self-love. And it's just a million miles from back then. And at that age of 19, I was introduced to smack, heroin. And it was a classic case of, I bought a 5-pound bag off a pal of mine and shared it with another pal. And that night I'll always remember because I was incredibly ill. And the entire evening walking up and down Abbey Road vomiting and drinking kind of this enormous bottle of Coke. And I suppose the kind of, you know, the powerlessness, the insanity and all that, because I couldn't have felt any iller than I did that night, basically. You know, I mean, I was at death's door. And what was I doing the following day but trying to get some more smack? And, you know, I didn't even know what the buzz was, you know, but the guy I split it with and every, you know, and anyway, eventually I got there, you know. And I was introduced to something that really worked for me, you know, that whole kind of sort of trippy kind of being stoned and smacked up and all sorts all at the same time and kind of, you know, it was very scary, basically, when I sitting here now, how kind of, you know, how seductive that whole thing is. you know, and using at night, then getting up in the morning, going to work and having a cigarette on the bus, then you'd be stoned all over again, you know, and this was all on silly amounts of gear. But so that was me up and running on Smack. And then my life began to change, you know, as the disease, the illness progressed. I began to change, basically, you know. I began to change. You know, and I don't know what sort of time period I had. Maybe I had a year or two before it turned into, you know, a kind of living nightmare, in as much as... Because I was still keeping up this persona of going to work and all the rest of it. And, I mean, that was the only way I could get my, you know, find my habit. That was my thing, you know. And... You know, my girlfriend turned into my sort of mum figure, you know, as they do. And it was all about hiding my drug use from her, you know. And it was, you know, to say it was dysfunctional, you know, there was me, my girlfriend, my dad and my older brother living in this flat in Kilburn. You know, my dad's a chronic alky in the pub. My brother's kind of having DTs in his bedroom, and I'm kind of trying to live in this flat, in this bedroom, in you know, within this kind of place, and all various local kind of drug people constantly coming around, and me trying to hide it from my girlfriend, and it was becoming more and more difficult, you know. And it was very stressful, you know, the whole thing, and it was very stressful. And then you put work in the mix as well, and it was just all, you know, I don't know how I did it, to be honest. I really don't. It was, I couldn't do it now. I really couldn't. But I was in a process, you know. I had no idea. I had no concept that I was, obviously I realised I was addicted to heroin, but I think back then I used to perceive it was a kind of choice thing. You know, you could choose how sort of bad or derelict you wanted to be, you know, to a certain extent. And I don't know what I was thinking, but you know, time went on, and the £5 bags became, you know, £10 bags became £20 bags, and then I wasn't getting stoned, and it was just going on and on and on. And then there was an ultimatum from my girlfriend, who said that, you know, it was the classic one. She walked in the room one night, and I'm standing there right in the middle of a chase, you know, smoking gear, and it was all kind of, you know, prior to that it was all, oh look, darling, sweetheart, blah blah blah, and I just gave up, you know, I didn't even stop. And she looked at me, and anyway, after she stormed out, and afterwards she said, you know. It's either me or the drugs, you know. And I mean, I really wanted to say, it's you, sweetheart, you know, you're the one I want, but I couldn't, you know. And I love this girl more than I can tell you, but I couldn't for the life of me say that, you know. And and she left, you know. And a mate of mine that very night, we went out to score, and he's in these rooms now, I'm very happy to say. We went out to score, and you know it is, you drive up there, no one say anything, then you get, and then everyone's a bit sort of buzzy on the way back, and I think I may have broke into song, in actual fact, on the radio. And you know, he we didn't use that terminology back then, he confronted me, but he said to me, you know, you're a bit, you know what, it was, you know, Debbie's left, you know, and you're singing type thing. And I said, yeah, you know, what can you do? And what it was, I can see now, I was relieved she was gone, you know. It was just another stressful thing out of my life, you know. Forget the fact that I was madly in love with her at one stage. She was just another kind of, you know, another hassle. And I genuinely wished her all the best, you know, in my own sort of way, you know. And fortunately, she did a great thing. She went to live in New York. But She wasn't here the last of me, unfortunately. But anyway, she went to live there, and I carried on, and things just got worse and worse and worse. And you know, I try to make the best of it, you know, because I am, as I said before, I am very kind of industrious and tenacious, and I can keep going, you know, and I did as much as I could. And then I remember I was actually in New York for some work, and I took gear out there with me. And as we do, a week's supply of gear was gone in, you know, about a day and a half or something. And then I thought, what do I do? What do I do? And what I did was phone up my ex-girlfriend. You know, how are you? Oh, great to hear you. Incidentally, do you know where I can get any smack? You know. And her reaction was, you bastard. And she said, look, you can. She mentioned the place called the Bowery. And that was where I was, down the Bowery. And God was looking out for me, because I was just walking around this kind of part of New York that's quite sort of, dodgy. And I just saw a guy, and I thought, now this guy, he uses, you know, there's no two ways about it. He is one of us. And I went up to him and I said, look, crash bang wallop. And he was all, you know, blah. And I said, look, $100 for you before I even buy any sort of gear off you. Right, come in, he said. So we went upstairs and a bit more of a rigmarole. And anyway, he was the one there. But towards the end of the trip, he turned around and said to me, have you ever thought about stopping? About getting clean, I think, he said. And I was like, not indignant, but I thought, well, you know, I wouldn't, you know, if I could stop, would I be fucking about with you all week, you know? And the same happens when I came back to London. Another guy, you know, my main kind of guy, his wife or girlfriend turned around and said to me, you know, because I used to go around and she used to make me sandwiches and all sorts of stuff, you know. And she said, have you ever thought about, you know, stopping? And I don't know if I had. I mean, I'd resign myself to the fact that I was a drug addict, you know. As much as I despised it all, I couldn't see any other way out, you know. And but anyway, a chain of events happened, and I ended up in a meeting, actually, in Swiss Cottage, and on a Monday night in the trophy room. It's no longer there. Well, they've torn down the swimming baths. They've rebuilt them. And I was sitting in there, and I used to have my kind of my uniform on, which was the old Burberry Mac, which was a remnant of the days when I used to spend all my money on clothes. And I had some pockets in there, and I had some, you know, a can of Tennent's and a tube of Baco Fall on the inside. And I was sitting there, and I must confess, I was in a state of absolute depression, obviously, and I perceived the meeting to be in one as well. And it, you know, it didn't really do it for me, if I'm honest, and I kind of left. And I don't know where I kind of filed that in my mind, but it went somewhere. But about 18 months later, I ended up in a clinic in Chelsea. And it was the last day, you know. It was a Saturday night, I was going in there that night. And like, I was working that day, you know, and running around doing all sorts of mad stuff, scoring, drinking, you know, trying to do everything, working, and just another mad sort of Saturday. And I ended up outside there on a Saturday night with a little carrier bag. My brother-in-law had taken me down there to make sure I went in there. And what began was, you know, a kind of some mad sort of detox that they were doing to me, which was a nightmare, you know. I mean, by this stage, I you know, I'd gotten into this thing where I was doing a lot of gear every day, and I was very ill in there, very ill. And but I've got to tell you, I went to another NA meeting, and a guy was doing the chair, and it was his birthday chair, 3 years clean, and he's still in the rooms. I'm happy to say. And I was sitting in there, you know, not long off this kind of detox, feeling dreadful. And he started sharing, and he said one thing. He said this thing about, he had a lot of his using was about, he had this kind of philosophy on board of, you know, oh, fuck them, you know, I'm going to use, you know, fuck it, fuck them. As something that I'd kind of been using a lot, you know, and a kind of bit of a mantra of my own. And he said, but who is it that I'm hurting, you know, myself, you know, because no one else cares, myself and the few loved ones I've got left in my life. And I thought, yeah, you know, it really like kadonk, it really sort of dropped. And I left the rehab, and I was going to meetings, and I was going to aftercare, but I was still drinking, and I was picking up clean time tags and all that, because, you know, drinking, I mean, come on, that was the first thing I did, and that was like, you know, I was one of those blokes, you know, who, prior to having the can of Tennent's kind of glued to my hand, I was like, I'd nip over the curry and, you know, to get me and my girlfriend a curry or something, and have, you know, one of those half lagers out of those mad little taps that they used to have in there, and be sort of kind of, you know, I don't know what I was, caught up in the whole thing of those tiny little bars. I mean, drinking was a real kind of really in my sort of blood type thing, and it was very difficult for me. And but, you know, one night I got really steamed after a meeting. You know, it was the, I'll only have one, I'll have two. Next thing, I'm really steamed in this place. And I've gone into this club up where I used to live, up Finchley Road. And, you know, my old pal started coming in. And God must have been with me that night, because no one turned up with any sort of gear. The only thing someone turned up with, believe it or not, was some amyl nitrate. And I started using, I mean, I hadn't used that since I was a kid, and I started using that. And I was ill, you know, in the toilet, and I had some kind of emotional breakdown in that place. I started crying. I said, I've got a split. I went home, I woke my sister up, because I was living at my sister's. I said, listen, it's all over, the whole thing, you know, it's all or nothing. And she was very understanding, my sister, you know, sat up listening to me. I said, it's this, you know, we are looking down the barrel at total abstinence here. You know, I mean, nothing. It's, that is what this is all about. Absolute nothing. As Layla was saying, you know, radical beyond belief, you know. And that's when it all started, you know. I was back at meetings, you know, got a sponsor. Forget all the other clean time. I was being clean off gear and not coke and boo, you know, it was now, you know, total abstinence, you know, clean today from everything. Obviously, I was still smoking cigarettes back then. and it all began, you know, and the sponsorship, I got a sponsor, you know, 90 meetings in 90 days. I was doing, you know, me and Brian, 4 meetings a day, you know, on Saturdays, and you know, if I weren't at work, I was in a meeting, simple as that. And meetings every night, coffees, you know, and the whole gig, you know, the whole thing. I completely surrendered to it and went with it. And I think it's been the same ever since, really. You know, I've certainly been clean and sober since then. And you know, and months, you know, you get 3 months and months turn into years. And, you know, and I used to live on my own. And I can look back now. And a lot of the time I felt very, very melancholic, you know, very kind of sad, a sort of soul sickness. And it was the meetings that did, you know, carry me through and love me back to some kind of, you know, normality, some kind of life. And my friends, you know, friends that I've got still now sitting in this room, you know. And it's been a fantastic, you know, a fantastic journey for me. It really has. And, girlfriends came into the mix, you know, very kind of painful at times, all that kind of stuff and what have you. And, I mean, my story is, you know, I got myself a sponsor and we started on the steps and then he relapsed, you know, he relapsed. And I didn't get a sponsor then again for a bit. And I tried again at sponsorship and that didn't work. And it's only till recently I asked, you know, one of my closest friends to go through the steps with me. And me and John have been doing that for about, I don't know, 5 years or something. And I recently finished my step six. And once again, it's this whole kind of program is enabling me to live a day at a time, not only clean and sober, but with a fabulous quality of life, you know, self-acceptance and freedom that I never thought I would have, you know, because I used to feel so inferior to everybody and everything. I mean, I used to spend my whole time that was the whole thing about getting stoned. I used to just pretend I was other people. You know, that was the sad thing, just all the time, fantasizing about being anyone and everyone except me. And about, 13 years ago, 14 years ago, I was at a party. A pal of mine used to have a party on a Christmas Eve, and I saw a girl in there, and, you know, I was immediately attracted to. And within a year, we were married. And within that year, we had our first, not within that year, but within another year, we had our first child. And we've gone on to have another two children. You know, when I sit here and tell you that I love her and I love the kids, I mean, I've got a daughter and two boys. And it's thank God that I've got some self-acceptance now, because it's absolutely essential for me to have that in order to kind of give these children what they need, you know. I mean, my 5-year-old, you know, I was, you know, me and him had a bath the other night and we did some stories, you know, bedtime and all that, and we put him into bed. And he said to me, you know, it's time to go to sleep. He said, look, I'm a bit scared, you know. And I thought, I know why, he's been overdoing it on the Halloween stuff, you know. And I said, would you like me to stay here with you, you know, till you fall asleep? And he said, well, yeah, would you? I said, yeah, of course I will. And I did, you know, I stayed there. You know, and he fell asleep within 5 minutes. He's kind of, you know, he's snoring. And I thought, you know, I thought to myself, if someone said to me, you know, when it's all over for me, when it's time for me to go to that big meeting in the sky, you know, that thing you did with your boy 20 odd years ago, whatever, was the best thing you ever did in your life. I said, yeah, I make you right, you know, probably was. And it's a real gift that I was able to do that, you know. I mean, it's so different from my old man, you know, and my mum, poor mum, God rest her soul, sitting there at Christmas dinner with sunglasses on because she's trying to hide the black eyes, you know, and all that shame and stuff. I mean, it is so different for my children, and my children have played a big part in healing me, you know, because giving them what they need is like healing that little boy in me, you know, that didn't get that and was trying to get it through drugs and or whatever he was trying to get it through, you know. So that in itself is has been a fantastic thing, you know. And I was in New York a couple of weeks back, and not taking gear with me this time, obviously, and I hooked up with a work colleague out there, you know, and he's a bit younger than me. He's a bit of a, you know, man about town type thing. And so we've gone out for dinner, and he started, you know, started talking, because I don't know him that well, and he started saying that his wife, she doesn't really understand him, you know. I thought, this is a classic one, this is, you know. And I said, really, yeah. And he said, and then it got on to, you know, he does actually stay out once in a while all night, you know. And I said, right, yeah, well, that might have something to do with it, Terry, you know. And then there was a kind of, then it came out that there was, he did actually have a mistress as well, you know. And I kind of thought, you know, and then after dinner, you know, we're walking back to the hotel and he's pulled the joint out, you know, and he's had, oh, I don't know, several glasses of wine over dinner, and now he's got the joint out and he's smoking that, and we're back to the hotel, and I said, so what's happening, Terry? I'm going to go in, mate, you know. And he said, I'll tell you what, I'm just going to have a few drinks around the corner, you know. I said, yeah, yeah, sure thing, you know, and off he went. And I went upstairs, you know, and I kind of just laying around watching TV, thinking about him, you know. And next day I saw him, you know, and, you know, there'd been a couple of girls in the bar, as there always is, and, you know, it was nearly happened, but it didn't, you know, and then, you know, he came back to the hotel and, you know, and that was that, you know. And then the same thing happened the next night, you know. And the strangest, you know, this kind of denial that we have, you know, he, another night he was telling me about that he'd come back to the hotel, but he felt too out of it to go to his room, you know, so he thought he'd go and have a few more drinks to straighten himself out. And I thought, you know, is this for real, you know? But he was, you know, he believed what he was saying, you know, and it took me back to the stuff that I used to say to people. I can remember a specific time where I had some money in this building society, and I used to go down there daily to draw out a couple of hundred quid to score with. And I used to tell, I initially started going there, and I was telling the girl that I was booking some holiday, right? Cigarette on, yeah, I'm booking a holiday, so I 100 quid, and this went on, you know, and after day sort of six, she kind of thought, well, you know, has this bloke booked the holiday yet or what? And I mean, I could never figure out who I was lying to, obviously myself, you know, myself I was lying to, as he was, you know. But, you know, what I want to say about this guy, the reason I mentioned him, is that there was still a part of me that was turned on by that whole thing that he was doing. Do you know what I mean? Still a part of me, intrigued, you know, and God knows I've done so much of that, you know, and I'm on it, but I'm honest when I say I'm so glad I'm not doing that, you know, because that is not where I want to be. It's painful, it's, you know, it's negative, it's such a dead end street, you know, but like I say, there's still a part of me, man, that is, you know, I'm by no way means immune to that, you know. And that's why I'm sitting here now doing a chair, I suppose, you know. And that's why I'll be at a meeting, you know, within the next few days. And I'm kind of thinking that I'm coming to the end of this chair, and I can't really think of much else to say except that you know, I love NA. I love what it's done for me. It's, you know, it's given me a life. Not even a life back. I don't think I had a life before I got to NA. I really didn't. I had some sort of existence. And and I'm grateful. And I love you all. Thank you.